It's time for episode 6 of Pop-Up Radio with Tim Butler of the Psychedelic Furs.
Greetings, my friends, and welcome back to another shining episode of Pop-Up Radio, a podcast hosted by yours truly, Eric Warden, and which focuses on music, the arts, pop culture, and community, including local business and nonprofit. If it's something that brings us together, I'm all in. I'm a lifelong radio guy, and you can usually catch me live 6 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday Eastern Time on air at 93.7 FM Bob FM. We stream at 93.7bobfm.com, and you can find our free app on iTunes and Google Play. Episode 6 of Pop-Up Radio features Tim Butler of the iconic 80s band The Psychedelic Furs, a band of brothers, so to speak, returning to the Norva. Bassist Tim and brother Richard formed the Furs in 1977 in London as a post-punk six-piece outfit to help fill the void left by bands like the Sex Pistols, Buzzcocks, and to an extent the Clash. Their mother was an artist, and this led to the boys' work in screen printing, which led to rock t-shirts, which led to, well, I think you're following this, aren't you? Selfishly, I'd like to thank Tim and Richard for the first couple of names they chose for the band before they went with Psychedelic Furs, names like RKO, which of course is a historic American film and broadcast company, and then simply Radio, which is certainly close to my heart. Let's start by taking you back to the early MTV years, the mid-80s that brought the Psychedelic Furs into the homes of millions here in the USA. New wave classics like Love My Way, The Ghost in You, and of course the song that perhaps affected the most of their story, Pretty in Pink. But of all those tracks, and dozens of awesome deep tracks and underground favorites, the only tune, believe this, to make it inside the coveted top 40 on Billboard magazine's Hot 100 Singles chart, this is it. It's Heartbreak Beat.
I'm a heartbreak beat. Yeah, all night long. And nobody don't dance on the edge of the dark. We've got the radio on. And it feels like love. But it don't mean a lot. And it we'll
from their fifth album, 1987's Midnight to Midnight, produced by British mega producer Chris Kimsey, the Psychedelic Furs and Heartbreak Beat. That song peaked at number 26, making it their biggest U.S. chart hit, literally. Now, in 2020, the Furs put out their first album, first studio album in nearly 30 years, called Made of Rain. Did you know that? But the pandemic, of course, shut down any plans to support the release with a live tour. Until now. The Made of Rain tour is on. Hot on the heels of shows at the world-famous Apollo Theater and a visit to our own Norva. Welcome to Pop-Up Radio. Tim Butler, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome, man. I'll tell you, there's some exciting folks, including me, that you guys are coming back to Norfolk. I've been, as Rob Dillman may have told you, I've worked with that guy going back 30-plus years, so I've been following your career from day one.
Rob was just saying that he's known you for a long time.
Exactly. Well, you know, for me as a jock, I've been a program director, just a music fan, certainly, and I've been a music journalist and whatnot. There have been some mysteries within the industry that I've never quite understood. You guys have a huge core audience. You have a place in the foundation of, I guess, what we came to know as New Wave. But for the Psychedelic Furs, just like even bands, even though you're totally different than Squeeze, I always felt like the critics were always like all in, and yet commercial radio was like just not as appreciative as they should have been. Now, the MTV crowd did tons for you guys, I know, but you had such amazing music. Again, I put you in the foundation of that movement, even though the chart positions may not dictate. So screw the chart positions. How about that?
Well, back then, just at the beginnings of alternative music and stuff, I think that's why, you know, we didn't get, you know, the top 40 chart positions, but we always did well on college radio.
Yep.
And well, when we first came over here, we first toured over here, we were told by the record company, you know, don't tour, you know, wait for the next album, second album, and tour. We came over anyway, and our own paid for us, you know, our own trip over here. We just hammered the college radio towns, you know, and played. And I think that's what helped us. And finally, I think around about the time of Love My Way, was when we were picked up by a still fledgling MTV.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's go back before those days. I was impressed to find out, what was your fascination? I'm curious. Now, you and your brother are the core of the band, and while he's the vocalist and you're the bass guy, and you write most of the stuff together, so all the songs we know about Psych Furs are the Butler brothers. But is it true you guys actually kind of began, rather than in the garage, in your folks' living room? Is that actually true?
Well, no. In my father had like a study room, you know, where he'd listen to music and stuff. And we started in there with my other brother had two school friends that played. One played guitar and the other played saxophone. And of course, he was in the band to start out with. So we'd get together and plug into you know, a very small Marshall stack and just. diddled around, and it got to a stage where it was getting too loud for my parents. So that's when we started getting a rehearsal studio, like, you know, renting a rehearsal studio once a week. And it sort of steamrolled from there. We'd never planned on, you know, going professional. You know, when we first started out, it was just, you know, a bunch of school friends playing around, you know, working out your favorite songs and stuff, and
sure,
just jamming around. So it's like, you know, then it sort of builds up slowly, and before you know it, you know, we were playing shows in London after only 40 gigs, we were signed, which is really, really quickly. So obviously, the music world at that time, you know, in England was ready for something other than three-chord punk.
Yeah, no kidding. So you're post-punk, or I've heard certainly the term art rock. Who were your contemporaries? Since you'd started as a teen, suddenly you're in your probably young 20s and you're breaking out. Who were you impressed with? I mean, at the time, I mean, was it Bowie mostly? Who was the big influence? Because I know for me, when I think back about Echo and Ultravox, Smiths, The Cure, I put you guys in the same boat in many ways. just really, you had a different sound, which was so refreshing. Tell me about kind of like that first influence.
Yeah, our influences were The Velvet Underground and Iggy and the Stooges, and actually Roxy Music and Bowie, you know, around about the times of 1972, where the first Roxy Music album and Ziggy Stardust both came out.
Mm-hmm.
So those bands, and then of course the Sex Pistols came along and knocked everybody, you know, sideways. So what our sound was like, we melded the, I guess you could call it, arty sort of music of Roxy Music and the Velvet Underground, but we gave it the energy of the Sex Pistols, the anger and the energy.
So by the time you end up with your first project, so we're going to 1980 by this time, how did you link up? I've just noticed that you worked with some super influential producers, and I got to believe that they had a big role in the evolution of your sound and your popularity. Steve Lillywhite went on to be a heavyweight in the world, you know, so did obviously Todd Rundgren. You worked with Todd as well and others. I'm just curious, where did that connection come from, and how much credit do you give to these people to help mold what it is that we got to hear when it finally hit the radio?
Well, I think when Steve got involved, of course, he'd recorded Boy with U2, and he had done the second Peter Gabriel album that he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he was quite young, and he was just starting. And he was sent a demo, I guess, by when we signed to CBS. And he was really excited about the project. But the way he did it, I mean, he just said, I want to make you guys sound like it's just a great live show. Not tamper with it too much, you know, not do too many overdubs and production, basically, which he did, which is why it does have a sound of a refreshing, like it's not too overproduced.
I loved it.
That was great.
You had a track early on called Sister of Mine, which I, as a early program director in the late 70s and early 80s, I was privy to a lot of this stuff that wasn't getting mainstream play, but I was like, man, that's different. That's very, like you said earlier, a little Velvet Underground, a little Bowie. I just thought it was outstanding.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who discovered your music later through, you know, the mass airplay and the MTV and everything, I hope those people who became fans later go back and realize just kind of where these guys sprung from, because it was a wellspring of real intriguing music, and lyrically, performance-wise, I thought it was outstanding.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the whole thing about us as well, why we maybe didn't early on catch on with radio and stuff, was that we would not go where, you know, you were supposed to do. I mean, the record company would say, oh, listen to this, you know, why don't you try something like that, or, you know, just change this up a bit and make it more radio friendly. We were like, no, we're not gonna defile our idea of what, you know, our sound is. So it took a while. I mean, Love My Way was we were not thinking that would be a hit, but when we were working with Todd said to Richard, why don't you calm down the way you sing it? You know, don't be so aggressive with the singing on it. And he calmed down his delivery a little bit. And then Todd said, well, that's the single.
Wow.
And I mean, Todd gave us those sorts of insights, you know, about how to become better songwriters, I guess you'd say it is, you know, rather than just blasting through stuff. Which, I mean, I guess on Talk, 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 we were getting that way. But we had been wanting to use strings for a long time, you know, because we were huge fans of Sgt. Pepper's sort of Beatles album.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were deciding on a producer, we had heard that Todd had done an album of covers. I think it's called Deface the Music. And we just thought, well, he's perfect. He'd be perfect for the recording, the production seat. Plus, we're fans of, you know, Something, Anything by Todd and stuff.
So yeah, yeah.
We were very lucky to be able to work with him. He helped us a lot in our, you know, how to actually, I guess, song arrangement.
He's good at that for sure. I wonder, when you first were introduced to Todd Rundgren, did you have a familiarity with his stuff, with Utopia or any of his previous solo stuff?
Oh yeah, I mean, I had all his solo albums, and Vince, our drummer at the time, was a long time Todd fan, so we knew his track work record.
That's cool. Well, that was by 1982, the 81 release, which was your second U.S. major release, called Talk, Talk, Talk. Let's go back a little bit to there, because that's where Pretty in Pink actually began. And while my conversation about, and by the way, for those who are just joining us, Tim Butler, bassist Psych Furs, they're coming to town, playing the Norva Saturday night, great 80s throwback. But I tell you what, it's not just about that, because they've got something new we'll talk about in a bit. But while you guys have signature songs, and we the people end up making those signature songs, and we'll talk about the initial version of Pretty in Pink and then why you re-recorded it and how it became what it became. But did you guys, I'm just curious, when the songs come out and you think that this should be the hit, and you mentioned earlier Love My Way wasn't something you thought was going to be released, did you feel there was anything special about Pretty in Pink?
Well, first off, no, when we wrote Pretty in Pink, you know, when you write a song, you don't think, well, that's going to be a hit. You know, it takes someone to, a producer, to sort of advise you, or maybe this could be a single if you did this, you know, arrangement-wise.
They flesh it out. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, and sort of, I mean, at that time, it's good to have a producer because there were six people all wanting their inputs to be heard on a track. You know, someone would come up with a song idea and everybody else would pile on, you know, trying to make their instrument heard more, and you know, more prominent. And the producer sort of is between everybody, sort of calming everybody down and advising, you know, this isn't a drum solo song or a bass solo song. You know, let's arrange it, you know. I mean, it's really weird because later on when we had the, it was used in the film Pretty in Pink, the record company were like, you know, why don't you, you know, write another song like Pretty in Pink, and we'd say, well, you know, when we wrote Pretty in Pink, you didn't think anything of it.
Right.
You didn't release it as a single. You didn't, you know, suggest releasing it as a single. You know, it's like, you can't go back to, you know, relive the past.
Sure. Well, thank goodness John Hughes was impressed enough by the song to do something about it and use it loosely.
Yeah,
as
it was Molly Ringwald, apparently, was a huge fan of that song, and I don't know, probably the album too, and she suggested to John Hughes that he write a movie idea around that song. So it was down to her, really, that we got used in that movie, and the movie was called, you know, after the song. So that was a bit of thanks goes out to Molly Ringwald.
Nothing is ever but straight. She turns herself around.
Psychedelic Furs, and what most would likely agree is their signature song, Pretty in Pink, on Pop-Up Radio. A tune from their 1981 album called Talk, 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 but as our guest, Furs co-founder and bassist Tim Butler just revealed, Molly Ringwald deserves at least some credit for pitching the song and inspiration to director John Hughes for the 1986 hit movie of the same name. They went ahead and re-recorded it at that time and re-released it, again, falling just short of the top 40. I don't get it. Moving forward, Tim, we talked about Todd Rundgren producing Forever Now. Love My Way becomes your first Hot 100 hit, again, just falling short of the top 40 at number 44. It was featured on the soundtrack for Valley Girl, where the soundtrack was so much better than the movie, even though a young Nicolas Cage was in it. What you had been putting out really became modern rock masterpieces, and fans were all in. You kept working with powerhouse producers, moving on to 1984's Mirror Moves with Keith Forsey and The Ghost in You, which again just fell short at number 59. But it is perhaps my favorite first tune of all time. It's just so beautiful, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, Keith was the first time we'd actually thought, hey, let's work with a producer who's got a track record of having American radio success. I mean, we'd never even thought of bothered with that before, but with when it came to Mirror Moves, we actually aimed to get more success in America. I mean, we'd listened to, I think he had just done Rebel Yell with Billy Idol.
Yep. That was just a real good move. I just thought that song should have been easily a top 10 song. And I think a lot of times, as we've seen through the test of time, that your songs hold up despite whatever chart position it ever had. They're the ones still getting played. I know they're the ones that are overplayed, like Gary Newman's Cars, and this is not a hit on Gary Newman, but I mean, there are certain 80s tunes that just get way too much airplay. And there are these other ones which are intricate and interesting and beautiful. And I thought Heaven was a great song, and obviously it had to have been for, I mean, it was covered by Annie Lennox, I remember, about a decade later. That was a beautiful track.
Yeah, the funny thing about that was when we had finished that album, we suggested the singles to CBS, and they went with Heaven was already getting being picked up by radio stations and stuff, and CBS insisted on Here Come Cowboys.
Oh boy.
Which, thinking about it, is like, why, if something is doing really well on radio, why don't you go with that song and not push something totally different?
Sure.
It never ceased to amaze me that they did that.
Yeah, that's the madness part of the method to the madness, and sometimes they don't quite get it right. Heaven should have been a hit, and I think that when covered by Annie in 95, I think it was her album Medusa, I thought it was incredible. Speaking of covers, were you impressed at all with the Counting Crows version of The Ghost in You? Curious.
It was okay. I mean, it did knock my socks off.
Right.
I mean, it's okay. You sort of feel, proud when bands do covers like that. It's like Korn's version of Love My Way.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, but it's not that much different from, the original. I think if you do a cover, you should change it up a bit.
Make it your own. Yes.
yeah, not do like a, it's Love My Way, but it's just heavier like Korn, but it's still basically,
Sure.
I Love My Way.
We're talking again with Tim Butler from the Psychedelic Furs, and let me ask you a bit, instead of going musically, let me ask you about the sibling rivalry part. Has there ever been that kind of a conflict with you and your older brother?
Yeah. I mean, back in the 80s when, we both used to, I guess, drink a little bit too much and other things, we'd get, egos would get in the way. But I think since when we had the break in the 90s and we got back together, we've sort of figured out and understand each other's importance to the band's sound. And so we don't have the same arguments and clash of egos anymore.
Should Richard actually be the front man, or is there ever a time you thought Tim Butler should be the guy up front?
No. I haven't got the the nerve to be the front man with constantly people's attention constantly on him.
Yeah. So. Well, he seemed pretty comfortable with it. I was looking at some of the other brothers that have been in rock, and I wondered if the Davies brothers had any influence in your early days.
We like the Kinks.
Yeah.
But other than the way they, I mean, I can't understand these bands that are siblings and they have these huge arguments and they don't talk, like the Gallagher brothers and the Davies. Why? I mean, blood is thicker than rock and roll.
That's right. That's right.
Your family will always be have your back. Rock and roll won't.
We just had the Robinson Boys in Black Crowes played here not long ago, and now we get to have the Butlers in town in just a few. Let me ask you about your project through the pandemic. How did that play into your timing of Made of Rain, their eighth album, which, and I'll get to the producer on that because you've obviously been working with some strong folks. How did that all come together for this album? A lot of people have had some outstanding comments about how beautiful a masterpiece that this album is.
Well, I mean, when we got back together in 2000, we were always planning on doing an album, but we were gun shy and worried that, you know, have we still got it? I mean, would it stand up to, you know, our past work? So we're exchanging song ideas, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's a good song, but is it, you know, as good as, is it as good as this or as good as that? But it finally got to a stage where we had enough songs that we thought were really good, and we had the band, which was, you know, playing together really well. We'd been playing together for, you know, quite a few years, and we just thought, well, this is the time. Let's go in and record and see how it sounds. So we went in and did, we had two-week recording sessions. So things are pretty fresh, and two or three takes, we'd have a song down. It happened really quickly, and we released it. But then we were thwarted by the pandemic, because we wanted it to be released, of course, to tour behind it. We were really excited to get out there, you know, with new songs for our fans who have been waiting, you know, they'd given us a long time, like 30 years between albums. So we wanted to get out there, and, you know, we were just thwarted by the pandemic.
Well, I thought the finished product is really good. Let's talk about your producer, Richard Fortas. He had been a part of, hadn't he been a part of your Love Spit Love chapter?
Yes, he played guitar in Love. Actually, we first met him on the World Outside tour. He was playing in a band called Pale Divine from St. Louis. And when we decided to take the break, Richard enlisted him to work on the Love Spit Love material, which I did the first Love Spit Love album, and then I left. But, when we got back together in 2000, he played in the first for our first long tour.
Cool.
And then he left us and joined Guns N' Roses, of course.
Yeah, I've heard of them. The the name Richard Fortas, probably not a household name, but beside Axl and Slash, he has more continuous time in Guns N' Roses than anybody else. And he also did some time in Thin Lizzy as well. So another very talented, very experienced guy behind the helm. I was just listening to the song Ash Wednesday a little bit before you called. It's just a beautiful song. Once again, I just got to give you guys credit. And I know those who have been picking up a copy of whether it's vinyl or whether they're downloading it, they've got to be looking forward to seeing you live. And I want to comment on how great you guys are live, because for anybody that takes the time to find live performance of the Psychedelic Furs, some people aren't good on stage. And they don't sound nearly as good on stage as they do in this. You guys sound better. I think you guys put on a great live show.
Well, thank you. I mean, we try.
That's the idea.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, after all the writing and recording, I mean, it's when the rubber hits the road. It's when you go out on the stage in front of an audience, and they're there to see you entertain them. Not just go through the motions. I mean, you can tell if a band's just going through the motions. A new audience every night, it just makes everything we're playing refreshed.
Mm-hmm. Has the web made it accessible for you to communicate, in some cases, one-on-one with some of those people who are your hardcore fans? I mean, there are some strange folks out there, but there's also real there's also real people who find a way to connect with you. And the music was the beginning. Maybe they saw you live. Maybe they were lucky enough to get a backstage pass. But over the years, have there been people that reached out that you actually kind of got to know and then maybe got a chance to meet them in person, and it's just not that weird anymore?
Well, actually, my wife met me through the internet. She was a fan from when she was 14.
Wow.
Back on around about the time of Forever Now. And of course, she was searching over the internet one day and thought, hey, I'll try and, you know, she saw me, it was on MySpace.
Right.
and she communicated to me through MySpace, and we started a relationship and got married, and there you go. So that's a fan getting to know me, so to speak.
I guess so. Well, I'm going to, before we wrap here, because I know you got some other interviews to do, but I got a note from a friend of mine that I was just texting with prior to our call. I'm literally 15 minutes from your phone call. And a friend of mine named Carl Timmons, who now lives, and he was living here in Virginia Beach in the Norfolk area where you're going to be playing on Saturday. But he lives up in the Baltimore area. And I said, I got a roll because I'm going to be doing an interview with Tim Butler in just a bit. And he's like, oh my God, first concert I ever went to, 1987, Chrysler Hall with The Call. And he was...
I remember.
Would you remember that show? I'm sure you remember that tour.
Yeah, I remember that show.
What a twin bill that was. Love Michael Biehn. But he says he even started smoking after the show so he could have a rasp like Richard. So it's not sometimes.
I think Richard's rasp is a natural thing.
Well, I tell you what, it just shows you the impact. And for just a second there, even though I was just texting with this friend Carl, I could sense the excitement and the youth that he had for the knowledge that you were going to be chatting and that you were going to be playing again in his hometown. And the Norva is a great, great venue, one of the best. And
we played there a few times. It's a great venue.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy your return to Hampton Roads. If it's cool with you, I'd like to play here on the podcast Ash Wednesday. Again, it's just one of the strong tracks from their latest album. It's only been out for a couple of years, but with everybody off the road because of the pandemic, it's still new to many people from the album Made of Rain.
Be broken, and love lies murdered. With those her footsteps, I thought I heard more. Just a rainbow against the window. The same old song, so play it slowly. Like a party, but no one came in. All a mess. Who's to blame? Some of me and some of you, all tied in knots and broken to some celebration should be in order. Let's raise a glass, let's all applaud the party. Pills, you're
It's 4 a.m. Sunday morning. I'm full of empty. The cats are yawning. A cost of plenty. Hired for the season. Is it real? Sing yourself to sleep and shut your crazy mouth. Your words don't mean a thing. So close your crazy eyes and sing yourself to sleep and shut your crazy mouth. Your words don't mean a thing. So close your crazy eyes and sing yourself to sleep and shut your crazy mouth. Your lies don't mean a thing.
From the Psychedelic Furs' eighth album, their latest, Made of Rain, after a nearly 30-year recording hiatus. That's a deep track called Ash Wednesday on Pop-Up Radio. As a follow-up, make sure and search for the outstanding video for the song Wrong Train. Features a lot of Richard's artwork. It's awesome. And look for progress on the single release called Don't Believe. Better yet, go grab a vinyl copy at your local record store, download or stream the album Made of Rain today. Thank you, Tim Butler, for the time today. Honored to chat with you. And thank you for your contributions to the colors of our life, because I honestly think music is right up there with faith. And so thanks for bringing such great color to our world for so long.
Thank you. When we play to see so many people out there singing along, you know, to our songs and stuff, it makes, you know, what we've done worthwhile. We've actually, you know, brought happiness and joy to people's lives just by writing those songs. So that's it's the greatest thing to playing now. It's just that we've given people that enjoyment, which is, you know, what music's about, basically.
That's a great way to end it.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Psychedelic Furs co-founder Tim Butler, another outstanding guest on Pop-Up Radio. Special thanks to Furs manager and long-lost, long-time friend Rob Dillman for making this possible. Good to chat with you, Rob. Get tour dates and links to all the Furs music from virtual to vinyl at thepsychedelicfurs.com. Pop-Up Radio is produced by yours truly, Eric Warden, from the cozy confines of my mobile podcast studio, a 1972 Airstream Ambassador land yacht. Pop-Up Radio theme music is called Keep Off the Rocks by Drew Armstrong in the Radio Room. Drew also produces outstanding music, by the way, with another outfit called Perloid. Check them out. The Pop-Up Radio podcast originates on the Anchor podcast platform and is shared on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. A cassette copy of this show is available exclusively at Akbar and Jeff's Tofu Hut, where the elite meet to eat reheated meaty treats. If you're digging Pop-Up Radio, please please feel free to share, tell a friend, like, love, just click something that pays it forward. And speaking of pay, you know, I'm not making a dime yet, but if you or you know someone that would like to help underwrite the program, gain naming rights for the Airstream or maybe any of its kitchen appliances, please email me. Questions, comments, fire away. GameWarden@me.com. GameWarden@me.com. Till I pop up next time, I'll see you on the radio.